You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/AHTT. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Peace, peace. You know what it is. It's your man, SKYZOO, Sky Zoo, live out the borough. And you are now watching the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast. Let's get into it, baby.
Episode 125 of the Ain't Hard to Tell podcast. Dexter Henry, Brian Fonseca doing the quarantine thing in New York. We brought back for the third time on this podcast one of our favorite guests, our man, the great hip hop artist from the great borough of Brooklyn, Sky Zoo. Sky, what's up, man?
What's up, brothers? What's going on?
How you doing, man? Everything good with you down there in ATL?
Yeah, everything is good, man. You know, we just down here maintaining and quarantining and, you know, just being in the crib. But everything is good. I hope y'all good as well, you and your families.
Family is safe. I told you the other day, you know, we good. Just trying to maintain, be safe out here in these streets. You know how that is, man. Just keeping it. But the reason we got you, well, first of all, I gotta ask you. Talk the quarantine life is good. You as an artist, has it been challenging during this quarantine period? You know, in terms of creativity, has it been challenging at all?
Yeah, it has. Because for one, there was a lot of touring I was supposed to be doing right now. So obviously, that was affected. I was supposed to be in South Africa actually this weekend for a show tomorrow, actually. And then in May, I was supposed to be in Europe for 3 weeks. So it definitely impacts a lot of things as far as touching the people, promoting the music, and then the financial aspect on the business end. You know, there's a lot of money left on the table. Now, it'll get picked up. You know, we'll redo the tours and the shows at a later date, but there was a lot of money left on the table, especially Europe. There was a lot of money left on the table that was already set in stone, contract signed, whatever, you know what I mean? So, but the main thing is, you know, everybody's staying healthy, and there's way more important things than doing a tour right now. You know, it's more about the lives that we're sadly losing. But, you know, so there's that element. Also the lab, you know, the studio. I've got a lot of new music that I need to wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been tough. You know, I have been getting, you know, opportunities to go to studio, but just not as like, all day, every day. It's kind of like once a week for, you know, 4 or 5 hours once a week, try to cram everything in, stuff like that. But it's cool, though. You know what I mean? I'd rather us be safe and be cool. So it is cool.
I was wondering about that with the process, because I saw on Twitter at one point you were asking people to send you beats and, like, you know, figure out some stuff you could write to. So it kind of does it force you to reach out more creatively since you just can't get as much studio time?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I actually ordered a lot of equipment, you know, for my crib, because now that I'm in Atlanta with the house, I got the basement. You know, I'm sitting in my basement right now. My basement is cut up in three parts. And, you know, it's the man cave, the music studio room, you know, the movie theater room that I'm building. So, you know, in the studio room, I need to finish building this studio. You know what I mean? So I was on Guitar Center the other day just dumbing out, just ordering a bunch of stuff so that I don't have to rely on ABC, you know what I mean? But so, you know, it's been cool, you know what I mean? Other than that, it's dope being home with the fam, of course, being with my son every day as opposed to him being at daycare all day, you know? So
yeah.
Sending them to daycare. The daycare is open, but I'm not sending them yet, you know what I mean? So you know.
Yeah.
Long story short.
I got to ask you this because as a fellow father, has it been tough trying to mix what you do with also raising a kid? Because I feel like it's a challenge. It's more time you're spending in a good way, but yeah, you're also trying to have a balance of two. You know what I'm saying, Sky?
Absolutely, because normally, you know, I take him to daycare by 8:30. I don't have to pick him up till like 4:35. So like that whole gap is me studio, phone calls, emails, working on stuff, dealing with mixes, writing, you know, chilling, you know what I mean? Like whatever it may be. And that's dead now.
You know what I mean? Right.
Just chasing him around the house all day until he takes a nap. And then I get 2 hours when he's napping to do stuff like this. Like, he's napping right now. So I'm like, all right, 3 o'clock, we can rock because I know he's going to be asleep. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right.
Well, but it's
cool.
I'm
glad we got you at the good time then.
Yeah. Scott, how does all of this sort of alter your writing process? Being that you're obviously not going out and traveling as much now, and you probably have more time to write, but given, you know, the state of everything that's going on, is that giving you a different level of creativity in your writing nowadays?
It is, but then it isn't, if that makes sense. Because it is because I'm home, so I can sit and vibe more, but it isn't because a lot of my writing, a lot of me is just experiences. Like I go out and whatever I'm doing, I'm impacted by that. So if I'm on the road, if I'm in Africa or Europe or even in the States, all that's different experiences and things that I'm seeing that turn around and, you know, I kind of soak it all in and then I start penning. And I write a lot on the spot. Like I write at the crib a little bit. 99% of what I do is on the spot. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll mess around at the crib a little bit, but 99% of what I do is in the lab, on the spot. So if I'm not in the lab, then it's a different thing. You know what I mean? Just because my adrenaline runs a little different when I'm in the studio, for whatever reason. When I'm sitting in the chair, speakers, monitor, wooden walls in the studio, that's when it starts flying. When I'm at the crib, I turn on ESPN, I turn on the Xbox, my son is running around, I grab him. The process is different. But when I'm in the lab, it's just that, and I just start flying.
And in talking to some of your peers, just what have those conversations been like? You know, how have you guys sort of come together and deal with this? And, you know, what are those conversations like that you're having with, you know, your fellow artists and other producers and things of that?
Yeah, it's kind of the same for everyone. I think the producers are able to just really cook because producers are more reclusive anyway. They're more introverted anyway because they just sit in the room by themselves and bang out. So the producers are ready. They're making 5 beats a day for 3 summers, Kanye. You know what I mean? Like, they're on that right now. But as writers, a lot of people write at the crib, so they're able to get certain things done. But me, I'm the type that really, really writes in the lab. But everyone's going through the same thing. Everybody just wants to be able to get back to normal. You know, if you got a studio at your house, then you're able to really cook. But everybody just kind of wants to get back to normal, you know?
Yeah, everybody definitely does. Now, last time we had you up at the studio, you know, we just coming off Retropolitan, release of that. We were talking about that. The reason we got you here to talk is new EP out, The Bluest Note with Dumbo Station. I've known for all the time, if anybody's listened to Sky's music, huge jazz head, like myself. I was even mad because you were up in Brooklyn a couple months ago. Was at the Beer Wax where they did you did that little, and I caught it late and I wanted to come through, but it was too late. So I know you're a jazz head. How did you connect with Dumbo Station? For people who don't know, Italian jazz band. I never heard of them. I got into them because you started doing this project. How did y'all link up for this project?
So I was on tour in Europe a couple years ago, me and Apollo Brown, maybe like 2 years ago or something. Me and Apollo Brown was in Europe and we had a show in Rome, Italy. And after the show, we're hanging out and selling merch and drinking beer, you know, stuff you do after the show. And a dude came up to me and he was like, yo, man, I'm a huge fan. I got a label out here in Italy called Tough Kong Records. We do a lot of vinyl. Do vinyl with a lot of different acts, a lot of guys, you know, kind of in your world. I'd love to do a project with you. I'd love to do, you know, an album or EP or something with you. And I know you're a huge jazz fan. I actually have a jazz band signed to my label called Dumbo Station. What if we did the two of y'all together? And I was like, yo, this is something I've always wanted to do, but didn't really put it to the forefront, but it was on my bucket list. That's something I knew I was going to do. I was like, at some point, I'm going to do a project with a jazz band, for sure. But when, I don't know, I got to get a band together. I got to, you know, book crazy studio time. I got to put the pieces together and pay everybody and do all this different stuff. At some point, I'm going to do it. So when he said that, I was like, yo, this is nuts. Like, let me hear them. He sent me a link to their album, which is crazy. It's online now.
Yep, I checked it out. It's dope.
Yeah, he sent me a link to their album, and I was like, oh, they're perfect. Like, let's do this. So, you know, last summer, June 2019, while Retropolitan was still being mixed, I was already in Italy working on this project. Mm-hmm. So Retropolitan wasn't even out yet, and I had to to the next project, at least, you know, creatively and, you know, productivity wise. I was in Italy for a week, you know, it flew me out to Italy for a week or whatever. And I was just out there rocking, man. We did the whole thing in about six days. Cause I was out there seven. One day we took off, so did the whole thing in like 6 days and just rocked out. You know what I mean? We made all the beats on the spot. It wasn't no beats that they had already. And I just took them. Everything was on the spot. Everything is live. There's not a drum machine in sight on this project. Everything is live: drummer, bass, you know, trumpet, keys, Fender Rhodes, lead guitar. Everything was live. I was in the studio with the guys every single day, and we made this thing together, and it came out beautiful.
What did you enjoy that process more with the live instrumentation? I know you had done some on your previous album as well, too. You had some live instrumentation in that, but
I always bring somebody. You know, normally I bring in my trumpet player, Sean Taylor. Mm-hmm. My man Aaron Harden, who plays keys for me. I bring in people post-production wise. So I may be rhyming over a beat that somebody made on the MP, but then I'll add Sean on it. I'll add Aaron on it, whatever. But this, like you said, having a band there, I love the process. The only thing is it's a little slower because we're making every beat on the spot.
Right.
It takes longer.
Right.
You know, where if I'm picking beats, if somebody played me 10 beats and I pick one, boom, that's done. Beat's already done. All I got to do is write. But when we're sitting there making the beats together, the process takes a little longer. So we may have 1 7-hour session and get one record done. Hour session and we get one record done. And for a lot of people, that's good. For me, I try to get at least one done every day in the studio, but I'm good for two or three every day in the studio. You know what I mean? So the process was, it may take a couple hours to make a beat because we're creating it from scratch. So we're coming up with ideas and the drummer is playing and we're messing with the keys and we like that, but then we scrap it all together, but keep the drum, start over. So it's a slower process, but it's a beautiful process.
Got you.
Do you feel like you're starting to get, because we had you on after In Celebration of Us, after Retropolitan, so there's been like a progression here. Do you feel like you've gotten more respect in that time for just the consistency of these projects you've been putting out? Because it's at the point, and it's been at the point where, you know, Skyzoo puts out a project and everybody's like, oh, we know that's going to be dope. You know what I mean? We know that it's going to be a dope project. So do you feel like that's coming around more and more with every project you're putting out?
Absolutely. It's kind of like every time you win the championship, you're getting more respect. Like, you're super respected for one, you're super respected for three, you're super respected for five. It just keeps going, you know what I mean? So it's the same thing in that theory on a different scale, because a lot of people have one joint, yo, that's amazing, it's a classic, whatever. Then they do another one, dad, that's crazy, you know, and then it keeps going. And the messages I've been getting, and this isn't me gloating or patting myself on the back, but the messages I've been getting from people every day is like, bro, you don't miss. You know what I mean? They're like, yo, you don't miss. Like, every project out since day one is nuts. Like, there's no dud. You know what I mean? We don't hear an album and be like, yeah, that album wasn't really it, man. There's no dud. You know what I mean?
And they all kind of sound different from one another. I feel like Retropolitan has a different sound than A Celebration of Us. This obviously has a different sound in both. And then if you go all the way back to like Music for My Friends, that has a different sound. So it's like you keep finding ways to keep reinventing yourself, which is very impressive because, you know, a lot of people just stick to their same sound from album to album.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Yeah, that's the goal. What I try to do is just grow within the music without losing the core. So I could turn around tomorrow and, you know, make a trap album. And then it's like, whoa, that was totally different from his last work.
Right.
Right.
That was the dud. You know what I mean?
Like, I was going to say, is that something you would do?
Right. That's not going to happen. You know? Right. No. I'm making the point.
I get the point. You're not trying to clown anybody like that, but yeah.
No. Yeah. Trap is great. But for me, that's not what I'm like. That would be the dud for my fan base.
They'd right.
Be like,
got you. Yeah. Happened?
Like, trap is great. I love trap, right. You know, in certain environments and elements, trap is great. But my fans would be like, ah, there goes the dud. We knew it was coming. You know what I'm saying? So I wouldn't do that. But that would be me changing my sound and reinventing my sound, but not the right way. The right way for me is continuing to grow and elevate and change the sound while keeping the core and the common denominator in it, which is lyricism, you know, New York City that I know, you know, 30 drums and break beats and break, you know, drum breaks and loops. And then everything on that just being really musical and really lush. That's the definition of my sound, like throughout the entire resume and catalog and discography. That those are the ingredients of my sound. And then you get different dishes. One day you might get fish and grits. One day you might get red beans and rice. One day you might get fried chicken, macaroni and cheese. But it's all soul food. You know what I mean? So it's all the common denominator is these ingredients and this essence. But it is a different meal every time you get it, you know?
So, Scott, with this project, the Bluest Note, you talked about the process of working with the guys on the songs. Conceptually, when you were hearing them play out different things, did you have the concepts for the songs already? Because you touch on a lot of different subjects, even within the six tracks on this EP. But did you have the concepts already, or was it kind of like you heard the music and then the concepts came?
No, I heard the music and then started writing, you know, because I write everything on the spot. And then even conceptually, like a lot of times I'll have concepts in mind. You know, like for my next album coming out later at the end of the year,
yep.
I already got all the concepts. I know where I'm going for the most part. Project is like 70% done. So, I'm working on that as we speak. But conceptually, I know where I'm at. But with this project, being that I didn't have the beats already, everything was a clean slate because I get the beats from people and I collect beats over a couple months. And then I pick 14 of them and that's the album. So now I'm building concepts on those beats, and then I write it on the spot in the studio. But with this, I didn't have any beats.
Right.
I went there with nothing. I just got on the plane, went out there. When I landed, I took a shower, went to the studio. The first record we did was Sing Comfortably. So we went in there. Was
Which is my favorite, man. Which is my favorite on there. I love that track.
First record we did.
Great and, closer. And
thank you. And you know, we just went in the lab, started cooking. And when we put the beat together, I started writing, and that came out.
Right.
You know? And the next day, whatever record came out, and then boom, 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 it just kept going, you know?
That record in particular, Sky, because what I took from it in my 4, 5, or 6 listens already I've done through it is like sort of people celebrating artists, right, while they still haven't, giving them the flowers while they still have them, right? And like I really liked you touching on that. One song I wanted to ask you about was, we used to live in Brooklyn, baby, right? And obviously, you know, that tacks back on the Roy Ayers sample. If we live in Brooklyn, baby, that made you touch on gentrification a lot in there, which you talked about in Retropolitan. I love the way you phrase it around Brooklyn as a lifelong Brooklynite, you know, really touched me in that way. How much did you want to get on that Roy Ayers, you know, sampling that and redoing that? How much was that important for you to do?
You know, for me, my next album, which is called All the Brilliant Things, coming out later this year, is a conceptual album solely about gentrification.
Really? You
know, yeah. There's moments where it's very blatant and there's moments where it's a little more broad, but the whole album is a concept album about that. So that's the next album coming out. So I wanted to use this song as a warm-up.
Okay.
When we was in the studio, I didn't have any idea to do it, but we was in the studio messing around and making beats and it just hit me. Like, so sometimes I look at it like God just walked in the room and said, boom, here you go. It hit me. I was like, yo, let's play this. And I pulled up, you know, the Roy Ayers joint on the phone. And it was like, yeah, absolutely. We know that record. Of course, absolutely. Like, let's do something with this, right? But then what it really came from was the Mos Def version.
Right.
Yeah.
Mos Def version of his album.
Of Black Both Sides.
In 99. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It came from that because I love that record. As a humongous Mos Def fan, I love that record.
Sure.
If you listen to my record, it's just a reinterpretation of his. I take a lot of lines of his and flip it, a lot of cadences of his and flip it. Because what I wanted to do purposely was update the record. So it's like, that's what Brooklyn was in 99. Like, Mos made a record that represented what Brooklyn was right in that moment. And it was perfect. He nailed it. And I wanted to make a record 20, 21 years later of what Brooklyn is now. You know, so the way he did Brooklyn what it was in the moment, I made Brooklyn what it was in the moment. Like, this is what's going on. This is what it is. So I took a lot of his cadences and a lot of his patterns. Sometimes I sit back, reflect on the place. That's the way he started it. He did the same thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And on the front stoop, like I took a lot of that just so you know blatantly this is an update of that story.
Yeah. Now you did it. You did it well. I mean, I loved everything from taking the Roy Ayers and taking that basis of it to the most and just bringing it together. It was really good. What's your favorite song that you did on this record for you?
Oh, man. I mean, I love them all. You know, songs and albums are like kids. You know what I mean?
Right.
Love them. Definitely. you know, we live in Brooklyn. We used to live in Brooklyn, baby. I love Good Enough Reasons, which is the last song we did.
Really?
Yeah,
that was the first single for people. Okay. Right? That was the first thing y'all released off of it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the last song we wrote and recorded and produced and all that. All of them, man. I love Give and Take because it was just so funky the way we made it.
I like that, yeah.
And There Goes, like when we did that beat, you know, when we...
Yeah. Oh, the video is dope too, brother. Video is, I checked the video out. Yeah, video is dope. Word. They shot that in Rome. Yeah. Looks really nice, man. Looked really nice.
We shot that obviously in Rome with the guys and just was in the streets of Rome the way I've shot videos in the streets of Brooklyn. I was just in the streets of Rome, wine stores and then the little cobblestone, you know, alleys and it just boom, there it was. You know what I mean? So, so that, you know, I love, yeah, There It Goes, man. I just love the bounce and the playfulness.
Yeah, I love the drums on that. It's dope. Yeah. It's dope for real.
Should we move on to sports?
Yeah, I'm gonna ask. I just want to get one thing about all the brilliant things because I know you. I've seen you put on Twitter. You said late 2020 with that. I'm thinking about this in my head, but I haven't really seen a rapper touch on gentrification in that wide of a scope. Like honestly, a rapper touch on gentrification, Sky. If I only think about it. It's been other people, but you really have done it on the last couple of albums talking about it. But to do it on such a wide scope conceptually on a record that's coming out later this year, was that challenging for you? Or is it easy for people like us because we grew up in it? We've seen the changes in places like BK and it's so much a part of you. You know what I'm saying? Where you can look back and see. Is this one of the most challenging things you've done or is it kind of like therapy? I don't know. I could see it being like that.
It's both, if that makes sense. Because on one hand, you know, my music is always about what's going on. It's always about what I'm living in, what I've lived in the past, what I'm thinking I'm going to live in the future. And it's this hybrid of all three of those phases and all that. It's easy in that sense because I'm only talking about what I know. Like my music is always just about what I know. It's never, well, you know, if I had, you know, 20 million albums sold and, you know, 30 keys in the house and a safe, like it ain't that because that ain't my life. You know what I'm saying? It's easy for me because I'm only speaking about my life, but then it is challenging on this project because I want to nail it a certain way.
Right.
There's a certain standard and a certain goal that I want to hit. It's kind of like if like KD went into the season was like, yo, I want to average, you know, I want to get a 50, 40, 90 line for the season.
Mm.
For the rest of the league, if he don't hit that, he might still wind up averaging, you know, 30 points and 12 rebounds and 4 assists. But he might be like, damn, I didn't get that 50, 40, 90 that I wanted. You know what I mean? 50% from the field, 40 from three, 90 from the line. I personally wanted to hit that. Damn. Or if he hits it, he might be like, yeah, I got that. You know what I mean? So for me, there's a personal challenge of nailing this. Like when I did In Celebration of Us, my goal personally was to make the blackest album that I could make and cover every spectrum and every side of being black. Black highs, black lows, black issues and problems, black successes and solutions, our culture, our lack of, the things we've done to benefit from and grow, the things we've done that have harmed us, that we've done to ourselves, the things other people have done to us. My goal was to represent black culture and black folk across the board extremely well and not fail because a whole culture and race of people could be looking at it and should be looking at it. So, and I felt like I did that with that album. To date, that's my favorite album so far that I've done.
Same for me with you.
Because of all that, because of everything I just said. So with this album, it's the same goal that I have. Like, yo, I got to nail this gentrification shit for everybody who's dealing with it, everybody who dealt with it, everybody who's living it. I got to nail this in a certain way. There's a certain way that this picture has to be painted, and I got to get that. So that's the challenging part.
Real quick before we get to sports, just if you can, with that album, is it going to be multiple producers or is it going to be just producers? It's okay. Multiple
producers. A lot of new guys. There's not a lot of huge names. I'm thinking now, I don't think there's any huge names on it so far. I would say my man Twami might be the biggest name on it so far. Twami, Mark Infinite.
Mark Infinite, okay.
Who else is on it? My man Cuddy Fresh, he got some placements. My man Drugs out of North Carolina. But it's a lot of new guys who you may have heard or you may know if you deep in the beat scene and if you deep in the hip-hop scene. But, you know, I don't have any huge names on it yet, I don't think. I got to sit back and listen to everything. But I don't care. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I can go get the biggest names in the world, and it may not be right. You know what I mean? So I don't care. I don't care. Like, I'm gonna make these names go. You
right.
Know?
Look, well, I was gonna.
Yo, they was on Sky album. You know what I mean?
Right. And that. They here, you know? And now they here, yeah. Right?
And I was gonna ask, would that be a challenge in itself? You know, being that these aren't, you know, these are guys that are new, like you said.
Right. Or,
you know, is that a challenge in itself and going that direction?
Nah, not at all. When it comes to selling, you know, it's always fly when you put the record out. Yo, production from Illmind, Apollo Brown, Just Blaze.
Yeah.
Oh, Black Milk, all guys that I'm cool with, all guys that I've worked with repeatedly throughout, you know, my career. You know, it's fly from a selling standpoint, a marketing standpoint, which is great. And make no mistake, those guys are incredible. I've never gotten a bad beat from any of those guys. You know what I mean? Like, those guys are incredible. They've looked out for me throughout the course of my career, just hitting me with beats and all that. So, you know, it's always fly being able to sell it, you know. But outside of that, I don't care what the name is, as long as it's dope. You know, you can send me a pack right now, and if it's something in it that makes sense, I'm going to be like, yo, bro, what we got to do? I want that. You know what I mean? So that's all that matters to me, is the fact that it makes sense and it's great.
Cool. I'll gotcha. Keep that in mind.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/AHTT. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
We got no sports going on, right? Knicks season ended. Might have been a good thing for us because it wasn't going that good anyway.
It's going to be bad, but we keep going.
Yeah, we're going to keep going. What have you been missing sports a lot, or have you just been kind of – have you? Okay.
Absolutely. You know, on my phone, on my iPhone, like, the most visited app on my phone was Bleacher Report. So, like, 90% Bleacher Report and everything else – now I'm never on it. It's like the least used app. You know what I mean? What's going on? You know what I'm saying? Or I was, you know, glued to First Take every day, 10 a.m. Now I don't watch First Take because they're just talking my old stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So remember back in the day when LeBron went to Miami? Yeah, I lived it. You know what I mean? I remember when that happened. I don't really want to revisit it. You know, it's whatever. So, you know, it's tough because I'm such a sports guy. You know what I mean? Like, y'all, like, I'm such a sports guy. It's tough. Yeah. I want baseball season to hit. I want to catch these games. You know what I mean? I love going to baseball games. And I'm not the crazy sit at the crib and watch baseball guy. Like, you know, at a certain time, of course, a Yankee game or a Mets game, whatever. I'm getting into the Braves a little bit because I'm down here in Atlanta now.
Oh, but no.
I'm not the crazy sit at – well, not like I'm switching.
No, games. I know. Yeah. I know you're not.
No, but the Braves are nice.
Yeah.
They got Ronald Acuna, Ozzy Albies. They're nice.
As a Mets fan, I'm just like, I hate them.
Stadium is amazing.
I've heard that. Yeah, my cousin told me. She said it's dope.
Have condos wrapped around the stadium. So when you go to the stadium, you're in a world. It's not even like going to Yankee Stadium. Like, you're in a world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cafes and you know, bars and everything around. It's like a world.
I was supposed to come down for a game. I was supposed to come down to Atlanta for a Braves game this season, see him play the Mets. I was going to do that with my cousin. So we got to check it out.
It's an amazing stadium. You know, so, but, you know, I'm not the sit at the crib and watch baseball guy, but going to the games,
yeah.
I go to a baseball game every day. You know what I mean? Like, I used to live at Yankee games, and like, I'll go to a baseball game every day because it's just a blast. You know what I mean? But, you know, I definitely miss sports, man. I'm curious as to how they're going to conduct the draft. They're talking about pushing it to August. I don't want that. I'd rather it be June so players can get familiar with the teams. Whoever we going to get can get familiar with the system, even if it's Skype and email and Zoom, getting familiar with the system and the lay of the land. You know what I mean? So I'm missing it for sure.
Yeah. I think that's only the case because they're looking at, you know, whether or not they can even bring the season back in June, and then that'll probably push the draft back, and then the next season will start in Christmas. So it's just like it's just collateral damage all the way around.
It's a domino effect, and it's crazy.
What I wanted to ask was, I mean, obviously, you know, whether or not the NBA season actually ends or continues, the Knicks season is essentially what it is at this point. When you're looking at the draft, we've talked about it up here. I think that they should probably get LaMelo Ball. Dexter is kind of like, he likes Killian Haynes, likes LaMelo Ball. There's a couple other guys. Who do you like so far of what you've seen from, you know, anybody in the draft for the Knicks specifically?
For sure, because he does everything that the roster doesn't. And then all the things, right? But then all of the things he can't do, the right. roster does.
Right. So
it's a perfect compliment. It's like you don't add salt to a dish that's already salty, right?
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, he does, no one on the roster can do what he does right now. You
right.
know what I mean? Like, the things he does, RJ can't do. And I love RJ. But the things he can't do is what RJ does. So it's perfect. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
stuff like that. Like, it's perfect. It's a perfect match. His height being a legit 6'8". My man, shout out to my man Dave Zinnon. He's a celebrity NBA trainer. He trains a lot of players.
Yeah.
League. And, you know, he's all over Twitter and all that. That's one of my closest friends. He knows all these guys intimately, like, when it comes to what they do on the court. And we text every day. He's like, yo, LaMelo, Tyrese Halliburton, like, these heads, because he's a super Knicks fan as well. He's like, these are who heads need to be looking at. You know what I mean? And I love LaMelo. I love LaMelo. He, like I said, everything he does, we don't have. Everything he doesn't do, we have.
What's your
you know
right,
I mean?
Right? And what's your assessment of RJ Barrett's rookie season? You know, now that we've seen him play basically a full season in the NBA, and you know, obviously. The roster wasn't really constructed around him as it probably should have been because, you know, it's tough for him to play his style when you have a lot of other bigs, you know, clogging the paint. But right. what's your assessment of him nonetheless?
He had a good year. I think it was a good enough year to know you got to keep him, to know you got to build around him, and to know you got to make him a focal point. Maybe not the focal point, but if you're building like a three, it's him, Mitchell, and whoever we get in this draft, hopefully if it goes our way. You know what I mean? Like, you got to build around him. He has all the things you want. The main thing with him is his lack of fear and his body size and strength. And, you know, he really is 6'7". He really is Diesel. He really is not afraid of the paint. If he get this jumper, like,
you know
what I mean? So what I would do, we talked about this last time, you send him to somebody who's similar to Train.
Right.
As much as I'm not a fan of this guy because of the way he kind of gets away with murder, I send him to see James Harden right away. because they're both lefties.
Right.
Because they're both lefties. Left-handed shooters always was awkward shooting. I remember being a kid and we go to the park and there was this Puerto Rican kid I knew who could play, but he was a lefty and his jumper was wild awkward because of how they shoot. So he would shoot like that,
you know, this side, yeah,
because they lefty. James Harden has figured out how to be a lights out shooter with the left.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard to do because it's just an awkward position for them because they left handed. It is what it is. He's figured that out better than anyone in the history of the league, how to be a lights out shooter with a beautiful form as a lefty. So that's what you call. You call James Harden. You send RJ to Houston for 2 weeks. That's who you call.
I wonder if James Harden would even do that, being at their competition.
I agree.
So
I agree.
Would a backup plan be called Michael Redd, maybe?
That's a great idea, too.
That's a good backup plan.
I think James Harden might, because I think it gives him a pat on the back as like, yo, you're an OG now.
Mm.
If somebody wants to train under you, it's because you must be doing something right.
Right.
So I think he kind of does. I think with those things in mind, I think he would. I think he'd be like, yeah, I'll do that. You know what I mean? Now, if it was somebody in his same generation, you know, he's not going to train, you know. I mean, Russell's his man, but he's not going to train Kyrie. You know what I mean?
Because right.
he's literally comp. He's looking at RJ like, it's going to be a minute before you get to my stage.
Right.
And it's a pat on the back. Like, yo, bro, we know you super nice. Here's the proof. We want to give you a bag to help this kid out.
I'm all for the training sessions with these players, as we spoke about the last couple of times.
It's crucial, man.
Yeah.
If they do it, it could really be a thing, man.
Like, I agree.
I mean, I remember when it helped Amari with Hakeem Olajuwon. It was just Amari got hurt, but it helped him when he went to Houston.
Footwork got better.
Yeah, he went to Houston for 2 weeks, gave him $100,000, and, you know, the story goes, it gave him $100,000, and he was out there for 2 weeks training with him and living out there. It helped, you know what I mean? He just, you know, his knees was what it was, so it ain't go as long as it could have, but it helped. He came back with a spin move in a post game and he had footwork, you know what I mean? So it helps, man. So I call James Harden, especially you got Leon Rose now, who's connected everybody.
I was going to ask you about that. What? Yeah, I did last before because we know we got to get you out of here. How did you feel about the whole thing with Leon Rose and Mills getting out of here? And with all that being said, Scott, are you optimistic about the future of the Knicks?
Yeah, I think the Leon Rose move was great. I actually have hung out with Leon Rose a bunch of times. He's super dope, super cool. He is connected to everybody. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So things will change because of that. Because there is this stigma around the Knicks of, I don't know if I want to go there because the organization is trash and da-da-da. But you got somebody there like, yo, I'm here now. So you're not looking at it like, are they going to do you wrong? You're looking at it, am I going to do you wrong? And you know I'm not going to do you wrong. You know me, right, 15 years, I done got you all kind of paper. You know what I mean? I done took care of you when you was in a jam with this team or that team. So you looking at it like, yeah, I know you got my back. So I'm good. We can go there now. Because it ain't, you know, a small city. It's the biggest market in the world. And I have you watching my back. All right, let's do it. So I do think a couple things are going to happen. Maybe not this summer, because I know the free agent class is kind of trash this summer. But I think within the next year or two, it is going to be something. And we had to get Mills out. We had to get Mills out.
Word.
I know what it was as far on the record and even off the record.
Mm-hmm.
We had to get Mills out. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Once he gave Timmy that contract, you knew what it was. Like, not because of Timmy's game or whatever, because Timmy is aight, but it was how it went down. Like, nobody was running to give Timmy that much bread.
Nobody.
So why would you?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you could have got him for half that a week later. You know what I mean?
Easy. Yeah. Easy.
It was those type of moves where it was like, Duke got to get out of here. He don't know what he's doing. You know what I mean? The only thing I wish that he was in the middle of doing, I wish they would have let him pull the trigger on that D'Lo trade.
Oh, that would have happened. I agree. Mm. And I asked Brian, I was for that, Sky, at the deadline. I said if they could have added D'Lo, I would have definitely done it. Free agency.
They could have gone after him in free agency and not have to give up nobody.
Yep.
You know what I mean? But they played around, didn't pick up the phone. The word was out there that he wanted to stay in New York, whether it was Brooklyn or the Knicks.
Yep.
He wanted to stay because he liked New York. He's a young kid. He's 23. He's going to Supreme every day. He's going to Flight Club every day. You don't want to leave that.
Yeah,
hanging out right. House. I'm just making this up, of course, but you know what I mean? You young 23 years old, you hanging out at the Supreme store and you going to Soho House and you going, of course you don't want to leave.
Commercials me. Too. He was doing commercials out here too.
You know what I mean? I heard he was living in Brooklyn.
He was.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, why do I want to leave? So, well, whatever team I'm playing for, as long as I'm in the city, I'm all right. They should have picked up the phone right away when they knew none of them other names was happening. They should have picked up the phone and said, yo, bro, what we got to do? You know what I mean? Made that happen.
Backcourt with two lefties, too. That would have been really hard to guard.
Yeah.
It would have been.
Like LaMelo, he does something no one else on the Knicks does. And the stuff he can't do, they there for. Oh, he don't play D. That's cool. RJ is right there to lock whoever down. Right. Oh, he can't get in the paint like that. That's cool. RJ loves living in the paint. RJ can't shoot. Beautiful. This guy is a 40-something percent shooter.
Right.
You know what I mean? 6'5", handles crazy. Lefty, lights out from three. What are we talking about?
We're starting to get to the line more, too. Right.
You know. Like, what's the issue? He is a little baby Kyrie, but a lefty, and he's taller. What's the issue?
I wanted him here. Brian knows that. I wanted him.
Yeah.
I wanted him
here. Yeah, I thought they should have pulled the trigger on that, man. And even, you know, a little random fact some people may or may not know, that's actually Westside Gunn's cousin.
Yo, I didn't know that.
Really? D'Angelo Russell?
Yep, 100%. That's
his cousin. Yo, did not know that. Yo, shout out to Westside Gunn, Pray for Paris.
Another good project he put out recently, too.
Yeah, bro,
that's his cousin. You know what I mean?
No, didn't know that.
For the city. You know what I mean?
Yo, like, shout out to Buffalo.
That's
great.
I do have one more question for you, because the last time we had you on the show, you know, Carmelo Anthony was still not on the team, and we were been talking about that, what's going on. Now we have a resolution to that. He's with Portland. We don't know for how much longer he's going to be with Portland beyond this season, but it looks like he wants to continue playing. So I guess, you know, were you happy about, obviously, him finding a team, and two, are you optimistic that he'll be able to continue playing? Because, you know, he looked all right this year.
Yeah. No, I mean, for one, I definitely am super happy he's on the team. You know, that's my man. Like, I know him personally. And, you know, he deserve it. You know what I mean? Because there's no reason there's 450 players in the league and he's not one of them. You telling me there's 450 people better than him? You know what I'm saying? Like, no.
Right.
Not in the league. No. You know what I mean? Like, 450? Nah, that's
470 with two ways.
470. You tell me 470 players better than Carmelo, Cayenne, Anthony? No, there's not. You know what I'm saying? That's just that's blasphemy. That's a lie. Like the I don't care if you feel this way about defense or this or that. There's not 470 guys better than him. So he deserved to be on a roster, legitly, not player 15. I'm talking player 4 or 5. You know what I'm saying? Like he deserved that legitimately. So I'm glad he got it. I'm glad he showed and proved. Was able to average like 16-4 after coming off a whole year of not playing ball. You know what I mean? Like people may want to feel whatever, whatever. Yo, 16-4 per night in the league at 35 years old after you took a year off.
Yeah, that's impressive. That's
pretty great.
Word.
That's
And it's a 3-point percentage too.
Exactly. That's pretty great. You know the rumors, and I don't know, even though that you know that's the homie, I don't know anything on the inside, so this is just me speculating off of what we read and all that. You know, they're talking about him coming back home.
I read that. Yep.
I hope it happens. You know, I just hope it happens because I've always wanted him to finish his career here. You know, I didn't the selfish side of me as a Knicks fan didn't want him to leave, but I knew he had to with all the dirt that was going on. I knew, like, you deserve so much better, bro. You know what I mean? Like, than what this organization is doing to you with Phil and all these guys. But the flip side, of course, I wanted him to stay here forever. So the idea of him coming back would be amazing. You know, I want nothing more as a Knicks fan than – well, not nothing, but one of the top things I want as a Knicks fan is for that number to go up in the rafters because he deserves it. You know, Denver's not going to do it because they already gave the number away. So – Denver's
that's right. They have. Right. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, if they didn't give the number away, maybe. But they were so butthurt about the way that situation went down.
They were.
Even though they came out. They didn't come out on top, but people like to look at it like that. But they were so butthurt about the way
they came out.
There was no way they was going to let that live. They gave the number away like 2 years later. You know what I mean? So, like, it ain't going to happen in Denver. So, and then, you know, these other teams, he wasn't there long enough. So, it got to happen in New York. And he deserves it. He deserves it to happen in New York. He's the most talented Knick ever, and he's definitely top 10, top 5 even Knicks ever. If you start naming, okay, Willis, Pat, Clyde, Earl of Pearl, you know, you keep going.
He's right
going,
there, yeah.
He's easily top 10 best Knick ever and most talented, easily most talented Knick ever. So he deserves it. And put the city on his back more than anyone because even though he ain't get a chip, none of the players who got a chip dealt with what he dealt with. You know what I mean? Even Pat, who didn't get a chip, but Pat dealt with a ton. City on him and all that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Melo's scrutiny was crazier because Pat didn't have the organization coming at him along with the city.
Yes. He had good structure then.
Because that's just New York. New York is wild and we love you today, we hate you tomorrow. You know, it is what it is. He had that, but at least the organization was standing tall with him.
Yep.
My man had the city coming at him and the organization coming at him. You know what I mean? So, like, and never asked for a trade. You know what I mean? So, he dealt with the most scrutiny out of any Knick ever. He deserves it, man. Put that 7 in the stands, man. He deserves it.
All right, we hope we get to see that
I'd
one
like
day.
I'd like to see a mentor R.J. Barrett, too. That'd be cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. And even more so than R.J., man, if we're going to keep Kevin Knox. If we're going to keep Kevin
I'm
Knox.
Down on him, Sky. I'm down on him, man. I'm down on him.
I'm off that train.
I've been off that train.
I got off the train. I went under the steps and switched platforms. I'm off that train. You know what I mean? Like, that thing ain't it. But if somebody can get it out of him,
it would be
Melo or it would be T-Mac. You know what I mean? I think if Melo was there every day, you see a different guy. Because it's just the dog and the want.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. He don't got it. I don't see it. I don't see it.
6'9", which is great. He can score, which is beautiful. He's slow-footed, you know, all that. You know what I'm saying? But there's no want. Every time you look at him, it's like, I'd rather be home playing Fortnite. You know what I mean? Like,
yo.
You know what I'm saying? And that's not a knock because we know he loves Fortnite. Like, every time you see his face on the court, it's like, I kind of wish I was at the crib playing Fortnite.
Yeah.
Like, bro, like, you know what I'm saying?
I don't see that want to, that go get it. I don't see that hunger.
Yeah. But you see it with RJ and Mitch.
Exactly.
Yeah, I see it with those dudes.
Like, I'm ready. Let's go. Yeah. Mitch, like, I'm ready. Let's go. But with Son, it's kind of like he don't want to be there. So if somebody like Melo is around, he's going to push it. Like, yo, Duke, wake up, B.
Let's go.
Like, this is the city, bro. Like, wake up. You know what I mean? Like, they tried to make Son the face of the city. When they drafted him, it was all about him. It was like, yo, Kevin Knox. It was all about Son. When he went stupid in summer league, it was, yo, Kevin Knox. They tried to give him the keys. You know what I mean? Like, he ain't want him. You know, you want a controller. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, so if somebody can get it out of him, I think it's Melo that could be like, yo, bro, wake up, B. Like, we need to swag you out a little bit. We need to get you tough.
Yes.
You got the tools, man. Just use them. Let's go. I think somebody like Melo would be perfect for Kevin Knox and for RJ. Just RJ how to too. Navigate the city, how to smooth this thing out, getting a go-to move. I mean, it really should happen. And hopefully it does.
I hope so, man. Well, look, man, we love having you. We always get to talk sports and hip-hop with you. Sky's new project with Dumbo Station, the Bluest Note EP, out now. Go purchase that. Definitely. You know, Sky, we always talk about the purchasing. That's the best way you can support. You know, we always talk about that. Sky's got another project coming down the road, All the Brilliant Things. That'll be later this year. We should have you back then to talk about it. And hopefully we have some basketball to talk about, bro.
Yeah, you know it, man. I'm always down. You know, y'all been rocking since day one. I'm always down to sit with y'all and build, you know, and discuss all these things and, yeah, and keep it going.
We appreciate
sure.
that.
We'll get to a show when all this passes, too.
Yeah, that too. We got to come to a show. People should know, when we reach out to Sky, we ask Sky if he'll come on. He's always gracious of his time and giving us the time to talk. So, true Brooklyn brother out there. Appreciate you, bro, as always. So all right, good. Man. So that's it for episode one. What is the episode? Is this? I'm sorry, I forgot my number. We're doing 125 of the Hand Talk Ain't Hard to Tell podcast. For Brian Fonseca, my man Sky Zoo, the great, talented hip hop artist. Until next time, y'all. Peace.